Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're going to be exploring something, called capital vices, and we'll be asking, can this ancient wisdom really be relevant to our lives today? So we'll be diving deep into Proverbs, specifically chapters 10 through 29, and we're going to be guided by a lecture from Dr. Daniel J. Traer.
You know what I find fascinating is that Dr. Trader emphasizes that these vices aren't just about those like gotcha moments, like, telling a little white lie or having one too many cookies. They're more like patterns, tendencies, even habits of the heart that can see us down.
A wrong path. So rather than just focusing on individual actions, we're looking at the underlying motivations and desires. That almost makes it more relatable, doesn't it? We've all got those, patterns we fall into.
It does. And Dr. Traer makes this interesting point that even people who aren't particularly religious can recognize these vices in themselves and others. We all have that sense of when something's a little off, even if we don't have a specific framework for understanding it.
That's a good point. Okay, so let's break down exactly what we're talking about here. When we say capital vices, what are we referring to? Is it the same as the seven deadly sins that we hear about?
It's similar. But capital vices digs a little deeper. Think of them as the roots from which all those other bad behaviors stem. It's not just about what we do, but about the deeper desires and motivations that drive our actions.
So it's less about pointing fingers at specific actions and more about understanding. What's driving us?
Exactly. And Dr. Traer suggests starting with lust, since it's a strong example of something that can easily pull us away from what he calls true charity, which is love of God and neighbor.
Lust is definitely a topic that gets a lot of attention, but isn't some desire good? How do we discern between healthy desires and those that might be considered lustful?
That's a great question. And it's important to understand that the Christian tradition isn't about suppressing all desires, it's about recognizing the power of those desires and directing them toward what's truly good and life-giving.
So, about aligning our desires with what is righteous.
Precisely. Proverbs 11:23 actually says that the desire of the righteous ends only in good, while the desires of the wicked lead to trouble.
That makes sense. So, where does pride fit into all of this? I know we're going to dive into pride specifically later, but I'm curious how it connects to lust.
Well, lust often comes from a place of wanting to control our own happiness, to satisfy our cravings without considering God's will or how our actions affect others. It's putting our own pleasure above everything else, which is a classic example of pride.
Ah, so it's that self-centeredness that can creep in.
Exactly. And Proverbs doesn't shy away from showing the potential consequence of lust. Proverbs 22:14 paints a vivid picture of an adulteress, comparing her to a pit that traps the foolish and those who stray from God. It's a powerful image that shows how lust can lead us down a dangerous path.
It definitely makes you stop and think. So, where does marriage fit into all this? Is it seen as a solution to the problem of lust?
Dr. Traer cautions against that simplistic view. Marriage is important, of course, but it's not a magic cure. Even within a marriage, it's crucial to let love and respect guide our desires, not just full gratification.
That's a really helpful distinction. Okay, so we've talked about lust. What about gluttony? Is it really as simple as just eating too much?
That's where it gets interesting. Dr. Traer argues that gluttony goes far beyond just overeating. He uses this catchy acronym, FRESH, to describe the different ways it can show up.
Okay, I'm in use. Remind me what FRESH stands for.
It stands for fastidiously, ravenously, excessively, sumptuously, and say hastily. It captures that wide range of behaviors associated with gluttony, from obsessing over fancy foods to scarfing down meals without even tasting them.
It's interesting how FRSH highlights that gluttony isn't just about quantity, it's about the attitude we have towards food. Do we treat it as a gift or as a way to control our feelings?
That's a great point. It makes you think about those times when we might be using food to fill a void that only something deeper can satisfy.
Right? Like maybe we're looking for comfort or satisfaction in food that we should be finding elsewhere. And Proverbs actually speaks to that, doesn't it?
It does. Proverbs 10.3 says that the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. It's a reminder that true sustenance comes from a right relationship with God, not just from filling our stomachs.
And Proverbs 18.20 offers this interesting contrast, saying that true satisfaction comes from the fruit of the mouth, not what goes in. It's like our words and actions, guided by righteousness and wisdom, are what truly nourishes.
That's a powerful image. It challenges us to think about what we're putting out into the world, not just what we're consuming.
So gluttony isn't just a personal struggle. It can actually impact our relationships and communities.
Absolutely. Proverbs 28.7 talks about how companions of gluttons shame their parents. Our choices about food and drink can reflect on those around us, especially our families.
That's something I hadn't considered before. Okay, so we've covered lust and gluttony. What's next on our list of capital vices?
Next up is greed, which Dr. Traylor describes as a kind of spiritual dropsy.
Spiritual dropsy, that's a new one for me. Can you unpack that a bit more?
Think of it like this. With dropsy, you're always thirsty. Even though you're full of water, it's a medical condition. But Dr. Traylor uses it as a metaphor for greed. It's that insatiable desire for more, 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 even when we already have plenty.
So it's about that feeling of never being satisfied, always wanting more.
Exactly. And it's not just about wanting a lot of stuff. Greed is about money and possessions becoming the driving force in our lives, taking priority over relationships, generosity, and even our own values.
Dr. Terry uses the example of a usurer to illustrate how greed can warp our sense of what's important. Can you explain what a usurer is?
A user is someone who lends money at extremely high interest rates, essentially profiting from other people's misfortune. It's a classic example of how greed can twist our priorities and lead to exploiting others for personal gain.
And we see some pretty stark examples of greed in the Bible, right?
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Traylor brings up the story of King Ahab and Jezebel, who had Naboth killed just so they could take his vineyard. It's a chilling example of how far greed can drive people.
Wow, that's pretty intense. And it seems like pride plays a big role there too, doesn't it? That sense of entitlement, of believing you deserve more than others.
Definitely. Greed often stems from the belief that our worth is tied to what we possess, that having more makes us better than others.
Which, of course, Proverbs warns us against. Remember that line about pride goes before a fall?
Exactly. Proverbs reminds us that true wealth isn't about material possessions. Proverbs 11.4 says that riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death.
That's a powerful reminder to focus on what truly matters. So after lust, gluttony, and greed, what's the next vice on our list?
It's sloth. And like the other vices, it's a bit more complex than it might seem on the surface.
Okay. Because I'll be honest, when I hear sloth, I just picture someone sleeping in and avoiding responsibility.
Right. But Dr. Traylor explains that it's much deeper than just laziness. It's more about a lack of caring, a refusal to engage with life and fulfill our responsibilities, but also tied to this idea of tristitia, which is a kind of sadness or sorrow that can lead to despair.
So is it like giving up on the possibility of change and growth, both in ourselves and in the world?
That's a great way to put it. It's that feeling of apathy or resignation that can prevent us from using our gifts and contributing to something bigger than ourselves.
No, I know. Proverbs emphasizes hard work and diligence, but it also acknowledges that poverty isn't always the result of laziness.
Right.
Like in Proverbs 13.23, which says that the poor are hated even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends.
You're exactly right. Proverbs recognizes that there are systems and structures that can contribute to poverty. And it's not always about individual effort, but at the same time, it challenges us to be active participants in our lives and to not give in to apathy or despair.
That's a helpful distinction. So we've covered lust, gluttony, greed, and sloth. What other vices do we need to explore?
In this deep dive, three more to unpack: wrath, envy, and of course, we'll circle back to pride in more detail.
This is already giving me a lot to think about. I'm ready to keep going if you are.
Let's do it. We'll dive into those remaining vices in part two of this deep dive.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the capital vices. We're picking up where we left off, exploring how these ancient ideas from Proverbs can still speak to us today. We've already covered lust, gluttony, greed, and sloth. Now, I'm curious about wrath, because isn't some anger justified sometimes?
True. Not all anger is created equal. Even the Bible talks about righteous anger, like in Ephesians. But how do we distinguish between righteous anger and the kind of wrath that Proverbs warns us against?
That's a good question. I guess it's easy to justify our anger, especially when we feel wrong or hurt. But where do we draw the line?
Dr. Traeger acknowledges that there are definitely times when anger is a legitimate response, especially when we see injustice happening. But he also reminds us that even righteous anger needs to be handled carefully. We can't let it fester or control us.
I hear you on the need to manage our anger. But isn't it important to speak up against injustice, even if it means expressing anger?
It absolutely is. Speaking truth to power and fighting for what's right are crucial. But Proverbs offers some practical advice on how to do that effectively. Dr. Traeger sums it up with two words: cool it.
Cool it. That's pretty straightforward.
Right. It's a reminder to pause before reacting, to choose our words and actions carefully, even when we're feeling intense emotions.
Proverbs also uses some pretty vivid imagery to illustrate the dangers of unchecked anger, doesn't it?
It does. Proverbs 10, 6 and 11 talk about how the mouth of the wicked compels violence. And Proverbs 17.14 compares starting a quarrel to a letting out water. It can quickly become something you can't control.
Those are great images. It's like, once you unleash that flood of anger, it's hard to stop it. And speaking of words, I was struck by how Proverbs connects anger to slander.
It's a fascinating link. Proverbs 25.23 says that a backbiting tongue produces anger as surely as the north wind brings rain.
Sorry. When we speak negatively about others, we're stirring up anger and creating a climate of conflict.
So it's not just about controlling our outbursts. It's about being mindful of how our words can impact others, even in subtle ways.
Exactly. Our words have power, and Proverbs reminds us to use them wisely, especially when we're feeling angry.
Proverbs also offers some powerful guidance on how to deal with those feelings of anger and the desire for revenge. It reminds us that vengeance is mine. I will repay. It's a call. Proverbs 20.22 puts it this way: do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will help you. It's a call to trust God's justice rather than taking matters into our own hands.
That can be so hard, though, can it? Especially when we feel like we've been wronged. But I guess it's about anger and revenge. Ultimately, don't solve anything.
That's right. They just perpetuate cycles of hurt and resentment. Speaking of destructive emotions, envy is another vice that can really eat away at it.
Okay, let's talk about envy, because I think it's something we all experience at some point. It's so easy to compare ourselves to others and feel.
Definitely part of the human experience. But envy, as Dr. Traeger explains it, goes beyond just wanting what someone else has. It's about wishing ill on them because of their success, feeling bitter and resentful over their good fortune.
It's almost like we're diminishing their accomplishments and ourselves in the process, isn't it?
Exactly. And Dr. Traeger traces this all the way back to the Bible, to stories like Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. He points out that envy has been around since the beginning, and it can lead to all sorts of destructive behavior.
So if we're all prone to envy, what can we do about it? Does Proverbs offer any guidance?
Well, it doesn't address envy as directly as some of the other vices. Proverbs does offer some wisdom that applies. Proverbs 23 and 24 advise us not to envy the wicked or the rich, because their pursuits ultimately lead to destruction.
It's like that saying, comparison is the thief of joy.
Right. Focusing on what others have can distract us from appreciating our own blessings.
Absolutely. And it's easy to get caught up in those comparisons, especially in today's world with social media constantly showcasing everyone's highlight reels.
It's like everyone's presenting their best selves online, which makes it even harder to resist those envious feelings.
It's true. It's so easy to fall into that trap of thinking everyone else has it all figured out. But Proverbs reminds us that outward appearances can be deceiving, and that true happiness isn't found in material wealth or worldly success.
It's about finding contentment and gratitude for what we have, rather than constantly striving for what we lack.
Exactly. Speaking of striving, that brings us back to one of the most insidious vices, pride. I have a feeling this is where things get, it's really interesting. We've touched on pride as being at the root of many other vices. But what makes it so dangerous on its own?
Pride can be so sneaky because it often disguises itself. It's not always about being arrogant or boastful. Sometimes it shows up as a need for constant recognition or a desire to prove ourselves to others.
Like pride is whispering in our ear, you deserve more, while humility whispers, you're not the center of the universe.
That's a perfect way to put it. And Dr. Traer points out how this pride can show up in our interactions with others, especially when it comes to accepting advice or correction.
Like, we build up these walls thinking we already know everything, which prevents us from learning and growing.
Exactly. We become resistant to feedback, even when it's offered with good intentions. And this is where the fear of the Lord comes in.
Okay. I've always found the concept of fear of the Lord a little confusing. Can you explain what that means in this context?
It's not about being terrified of God. It's more about having a deep respect and awe for his power and authority. It's recognizing that our own understanding is limited and that we need to be open to his wisdom.
So it's about humility, recognizing that we don't have all the answers and being willing to learn from God and others.
Precisely. And Proverbs emphasizes that this fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. When we approach life with humility and a willingness to learn, we open ourselves up to God's guidance and correction.
Instead of trying to control everything and prove ourselves, we surrender to something bigger than ourselves.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And that surrender can actually be incredibly freeing. It allows us to let go of the need to be perfect and to embrace the journey of growth and transformation.
This has been such a rich and insightful exploration of these vices. It's making me think about how they show up in my own life and how I can better combat them.
I'm glad to hear that. Proverbs isn't just about identifying our flaws. It's about offering us a path towards wholeness and flourishing.
It's about recognizing those negative patterns and choosing a different way.
Exactly. And it starts with cultivating that humble and teachable heart. Are you ready to continue exploring this in part 3?
Absolutely. I'm eager to hear what other insights we can glean from Proverbs on this journey toward overcoming these vices. Welcome back to our deep dive into the capital vices. We've been exploring this idea that ancient wisdom can actually be surprisingly relevant to modern lives. We've covered a lot of ground, from lust and gluttony to envy and wrath. And now we're circling back to pride, which we've touched on as being at the root of so many of these tricky tendencies.
What strikes me about pride is how subtle it can be. It's not always about being arrogant or boastful. Sometimes it hides behind a mask of wanting to be recognized or needing to prove ourselves to others.
That's so true. It's like that internal struggle between wanting to be humble and wanting to make sure everyone knows how great we are.
And, you know, Dr. Traer points out that this pride can really affect how we interact with others, especially when it comes to getting advice or even just constructive criticism. Remember how Proverbs 12.15 says, "Fools think their own way is right, but the wise listen to advice." Pride can make us shut down and ignore feedback, even if it's well-intentioned.
I've definitely been there. It's like that voice in your head saying, "I've got this figured out," even when you
probably don't. But if pride is the problem, is humility the solution?
What Proverbs seems to suggest, true wisdom, according to Proverbs, starts with recognizing our limitations and being open to learning from others. It's about having that beginner's mind and realizing we don't have all the answers.
And that ties back to what we talked about earlier, the fear of the Lord. Not fear in the sense of being terrified, but that deep respect and understanding that God is the ultimate source of wisdom. Exactly. It's about approaching life with a sense of humility and awe, recognizing that we're not the center of the universe. Proverbs reminds us that true wisdom comes from aligning ourselves with God's will.
So it's about surrendering that need to be in control and trusting in something bigger than ourselves.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's about letting go of the ego and embracing that we are part of something much larger and more meaningful.
You know, thinking about all these vices, it's kind of daunting. They feel so deeply ingrained in human nature. Does Proverbs offer any hope for actually overcoming them?
The beauty of Proverbs lies, it's not just about pointing out our flaws. It's about offering us a path towards growth and transformation. It's a guidebook for living a life of wisdom, integrity, and love.
So recognizing those vices is the first step, then actively working to change those negative patterns.
Exactly. Proverbs encourages us to examine our hearts, to be honest about our weaknesses, and to seek guidance in transforming our desires and motivations. And remember, it's a journey, not a destination. We all stumble. But the key is to keep striving.
It's about progress, not perfection, and focusing on aligning our lives with what truly matters.
The heart of it. Proverbs reminds us that true happiness and fulfillment don't come from indulging our selfish impulses. It's about aligning our lives with God's will, seeking the well-being of others, and living a life of purpose and meaning.
This has been such a thought-provoking conversation. I feel like I have a whole new perspective on these vices and how they play out in my own life.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I think the biggest takeaway from all of this is that even though these vices have been around for centuries, they're still incredibly relevant. Today, they challenge us to look inward, to be honest with ourselves, and to strive to become better versions of ourselves.
It's a reminder that we all have work to do, but we don't have to do it alone.
Exactly. And I think a final thought-provoking question to leave our listener with is this: if pride is truly the root of all these vices, how can we cultivate humility in our daily lives? How can we let go of that need to be right, to be recognized, and to be in control?
That's a powerful question to ponder. And thankfully, Proverbs offers some practical wisdom and guidance as we navigate that journey. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the capital vices. We hope it's given you some food for thought and some inspiration to live a life of greater wisdom and virtue. Some AAA.